This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode number 17 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa from WW Today, and on the show is blogger, runner, and lover of cold weather, Michelle Scribner-McLean. Michelle, welcome.
Oh, hi, Mike. For a lifelong New Englander, I am not a lover of cold weather, but how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm back on the road to recovery.
That's great. I have a shout out, and this is really cool because it's a very good friend of the show and some exciting news, and I don't even think Steve knows this, but the shout out is to Kim Taylor, and we have never met Kim Taylor, but she's a super supporter of the show, and she's just been wonderful, and she sent me a little note yesterday saying that our podcast, the Mickey Miles Podcast, was featured in three areas of the new and noteworthy section of iTunes. We're in the general section, we're also in the health section, and in the sports and fitness section. So we are tagged as new and noteworthy. So that was really exciting. But I just want to say thank you to Kim because she's just been super, super supportive of the show. So thank you, Kim.
Thanks, Kim. And also thank you for being here tonight. Is Steve Bernhardt. We call him Sock Geek. He hails from Capital City Running. How you doing, Steve?
Terrific, Mike. Terrific. Beautiful day in Austin, Texas. This is the type of day today why everybody wants to move to Central Texas. Blue skies, 50 degrees, great running weather.
There you go. We are receiving a lot of questions. And because we are receiving a lot of questions, we're trying to address those questions as much as possible. As quickly as possible. We want you to keep sending them, and we are going to double our efforts to provide you with answers. So this will be a question show. And we also want you to know that if you happen to be at Walt Disney World between Wednesday, November 28th through Sunday, December 2nd, I think it's Sunday, December 2nd. Please look for Michelle and I. We'll be attending a small celebration known as Reunion 2012. So if you happen to see us, please stop by and say hi. And if you want more information on Reunion, you can go to www.reunion2012.com. All right, Steve. All right, Michelle. You ready for questions?
Absolutely.
Bring it on.
All right. First question comes from Bonnie Smith from Lake Placid, Florida. I remember seeing Bonnie at the Marathon Relay on Sunday. In January. Bonnie says, I really love your podcast. I've been listening during my long training runs as I train for my first and probably only Goofy Challenge in January 2013. My question is, with the new course that they are having for the 20th anniversary of the full marathon, you talked about it going through Wild World of Sports Complex. So will it go through the horrible gravel road that you all said it was so dangerous during the Tower of Terror 10-miler? I really hope it doesn't. Thanks for all of your great information and advice, and I'll see you in a few weeks for a marathon weekend. And again, that was Bonnie Smith. I know that the course goes through the World of Sports, and it's right at the World of Sports, that mile 20, the big, big mile 20 celebration takes place. But I don't recall if the course has the runners going through that gravel road. I know there was a video that was put out about 6 or 7 months ago showing the course. Do either of you remember if that gravel portion was part of that?
You know, I have I thought you said Wild World of Sports when you first were introducing it. It's wild. I'm looking at a map right now, and it's not showing Wide World of Sports. It's not listed on there, but I have heard anecdotally that it's going to mimic part of that course that was at the Tower of Terror. But If it does, and I can't tell, maybe Mike, you're better at reading maps than I am. It you know, everything else is listed on this map. You can see the, you know, the different resorts. But if it does, Bonnie, I wouldn't worry. I know that we, in our review, talked about how we didn't like it, but it's a very short, I would say 1/16th of a mile path. And I think if you just slow your pace down, you'll be okay. But I'm not really sure myself. What about you, Steve?
You know, I did research this, and it does not appear that we go through that section through the woods. I looked at the course map, and then I looked at a Google Maps images, and I can actually see that course where it's cut through the trees there. And it does, we do not. It looks like we come all the way down to the corner and come in on the road. So I'm 99.9% that is not a concern on race day going through that wooded section.
That's good to know, because I know that we had heard some of our running pals thought that it was going to be going through there.
Yeah, no, when I looked at the maps, it looked like we avoided that. And I could clearly see that on the Google images where that was at, and that doesn't appear that we're going to go through there.
Cool.
Now watch, I'm going to be wrong.
If anything, if we have any other further information, Bonnie, we'll post it. Okay, moving right along. John Malone, who's asking another question. He's from Hershey, Pennsylvania, and he said, sorry to ask another question so soon. That's okay, John. That's what we're here for. He said, I'm running my first Disney half marathon in January, and my wife will be a member of the cheer squad to watch me complete the race. What does she need to know about transportation to Epcot that morning? I see that buses are not in service to Epcot until either 7 or 7:30 that morning. Can she catch a bus earlier since she's a spectator? Does she have to go to the Magic Kingdom to take the monorail to Epcot? How much time should she allocate to travel from a Disney resort, Old Key West in our case, to Epcot to have enough time for the race finish? Thanks so much for listening. Every year there is a group of information that is put out, and I believe it's tweaked a little bit each year. I haven't seen it yet for January. It should be coming out pretty soon. The thing is, John, that when we get final instructions, which should be coming pretty soon, we should be able to see that. Steve and Michelle, do you have any suggestions? My suggestion would be, John, I think she should get up and go with you to Epcot and then see what happens from there. She might as well get up with you. I don't know.
That's going to be a pretty long race. Of course, John, it depends on how long it's going to take you to finish the marathon. So that's going to dictate how long she should reserve for that. If you go on Run Disney, of course, there's information about the cheer squad. It doesn't have any information about when to take your buses, but we are hoping to do a show. We haven't asked him formally, but we have a friend, Dave Allen, who is just an expert in cheering Disney races because he follows his wife, Holly, all around for all these different races. And he is just a master at this. So we're hoping to have him come on towards the middle or end of December to give us more information. But if she doesn't want to go with you at 3 o'clock in the morning, I would say she should leave it at least 2 hours. That's what I would do, at least 2 hours before your expected finish to get over there.
Yeah, I want to add to what Michelle said, John, and that is when we're going to twist Dave's arm to get him on. He is an expert. Actually, we won't have to twist it. He's just very forthcoming with his expertise in this area. The thing is trying to figure out where the best places will be for your wife to cheer you. That's half the battle. Once you focus in on those particular locations, then you can plan your strategy. So number one, figure out where you're going to be, and then figure out where you're going to go.
Did you mention that? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say there are places where you can actually go to one spot. I think it's near the Grand Floridian and see your runner two different times. So the buses aren't in service till 7 or 7:30 in the morning, but unless you're running a really fast marathon, she should have plenty of time to get to where you're going. Steve?
Yeah, I was just wondering, did she mention that she was going to the Magic Kingdom? Was that was that part of the plan?
She said that she have to go to the Magic Kingdom to take the monorail to Epcot.
It looks like the goal is to get her to the finish line.
Okay. I was just wondering if wondering if come to the start line, then go to the Magic Kingdom, and then get to the finish line. But Yeah, I was going to say at the start line, there's not going to be as much to see as there was in the past now, because we're not going to loop around now. It's going to be just straight out from there. So I'd recommend, if you want to see them, you know, get to the Magic Kingdom right away, first thing in the morning.
Because she's part of the cheer squad where you have to pay extra money, she'll actually have some staging area where she'll be able to stay. But the other thing, too, to remember, John, is that unlike some of the Disney races, there are buses that day from every single resort. So she'll be able to catch a bus. You didn't say where you're staying, but she'll be able to catch a bus regardless of where you are. So, and in my experiences, the buses have been fantastic. There are lots and lots of buses running back and forth, so you should be in good shape. But stay tuned, because we're going to ask Dave, I think we just did, ask Dave to come on and join us and talk about cheering strategies. He's fantastic.
Okay, next question comes from Jana Nair from Orlando, Florida. She says, hi, Mickey Mouse crew. I have a question or two about training and running in Florida. I'm relatively new to serious running, and I'm in training for the Princess Half Marathon. I live in Orlando, so when I run, it's typically 80% humidity, 80% plus humidity, and as high as 80 degrees. I try to run at night because the mornings tend to be extremely humid, especially when it's near the dew point. In the summer, I run on the treadmill. So the questions. When you come to Orlando, does the heat and humidity slow your pace down, and do you plan for that when you set your goal time or pace? How do you compensate for the weather? Do you train for it in any way? I only know running in Florida weather, so I'm interested to hear how visitors view running in Florida, and I'd love to pick up some tips for training in a humid climate. Thanks, and that's Jana Nair. So, for those of us who live in New Hampshire and come down to Florida, there's no real way to train unless we train indoors all winter long. What we try to keep in mind is that, at least for me, the hydration issue is very key. And being someone who's coached for a long time, I've always told any of my athletes who play in the summer to, if they have a big game or something happening on a Saturday or Sunday, to begin the hydration early. So that's how I hit the that's how I deal with the heat. Steve, what about you?
You know, I've run the marathon down there 5 times, and I've had everything. I've had crazy heat, high humidity. I think the second year I ran it down there, we were running in the fog because the humidity level was so high. I ran it the year when it was snaining on us, snow rain combination. So you do have to really be prepared for just about anything on race day in January. But, you know, for people coming out of town, going down there, you know, in most cases, you know, the weather's, you know, you're subject to wherever you're training at. Like you said, Mike, you're up there in New Hampshire. I used to be up in Wisconsin, and that'd be a big challenge to come down from, you know, cold weather running and come down, particularly the years when it was hot. So obviously, yeah, it is going to adjust. I think she was asking, is it going to adjust your pace, your finishing times? No question. I think for every 10 degrees in a marathon, you're adding something like 12 minutes. So yeah, you've got to come down there. And if you're not acclimated for that, you know, for either the cold or the heat, it's definitely going to adjust your finishing time, particularly if it's hot. I train now in an environment now that has got that heat and humidity, not quite to what you have down there in Florida. You know, it definitely is, there's an acclimatization process that goes on. It sounds like she's doing some things like running at night, early in the morning, those types of things to try to stay out of the sun. I think you want to start supplementing with things like an electrolyte tabs, those types of things, to make sure you're getting your electrolytes, so you don't have any stomach problems or cramping issues, or and so you're also holding your hydration. But really, it is just about getting out there, adding mileage slowly, and adapting to those temperatures from a training perspective.
The only thing I wanted to add is that I think every runner is different. Just, I know I get teased a lot because, as I said at the beginning of the show, I grew up in New England. I hate the cold. I love running in the warm weather. So July, August around here, I'm very, very happy. I think you need to know yourself. You need to know what works for you. When I run in Florida, I try to figure out, looking at the weather, you know, what temperature and what time is going to work for me. So that means sometimes I'm getting up really early to run if it's going to be super, super hot. I think just making sure you're hydrated, making sure that you're using sunblock, it's really important. And I'm not really sure I think Steve and Mike gave you some other good tips. But, you know, in January, it's pretty cold, and it's much like running up here in New Hampshire in the fall. So I hope that helped, Jana.
I think last year, though, I didn't run the marathon last year, but I think the weather was perfect last year. So I'm ordering up the same weather this year.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. We don't want any of that slate. What did you call it? Rain and
snain.
Snain. I like that.
Mix of snow and rain.
Yeah, it was bad.
The next question comes from Nate, who says, "Hi, Mike, Michelle, and Steve. I'm a new runner and have a general training question for you that I thought you might be able to answer on the next show. I am training for the Austin Half Marathon this coming February and have found that as I'm starting to get up to 6 to 7 miles and longer on my long runs, I'm getting pretty thirsty towards the end, which makes me wonder, when should I start carrying water or energy gels on my longer runs? Any other ideas for keeping energy during long runs? Also, will Steve be at the Austin Expo or race? I'd love to stop by to say hello. Thanks for the answers. I'm enjoying the podcast very much." This is an easy question, Nate. You should be wearing a water belt. You should be taking gels with you. You should get into a routine. It should be like clockwork. You want to make sure that you're giving yourself nutrition and hydration early and often, because what you do early on in a training run and a race will yield dividends later on. So, you know, taking an energy gel 15 minutes before you run, and then every 30 to 45 minutes afterwards, taking a little sips of water along the way, or whatever kind of an electrolyte drink you have, is going to work. Early on is the key. If you do bring electrolyte drink, you may want to mix that up with water. Steve, I'm going to turn it to you because he mentioned the Austin Expo.
Yeah, it looks like Capital City Running and Sawkeek will be at the Austin Marathon Expo. So please do, seek us out and introduce yourself. I'd love to meet you. You know, I think part of the question was, when should you start introducing those things? I usually encourage people that are doing a half marathon, if they're going to be using some energy gels, which I do encourage, a lot of it depends on how long you're going to be out there on the course. So if you can do it by miles or you can do it by time, but I would try to do it, start at least 30 minutes and start from 30 minutes in. Maybe take one. I often take a gel before I start, but again, every 30 minutes. So if you're a 2-hour half marathoner, for example, you're going to take one at the start, you're going to take one at 30, you're going to take one at 60, you're going to take one at 90, and that should hopefully get you to the finish line. If you have to pop another one in that last 30 minutes, that's fine as well. But just kind of a general strategy, I guess. I mean, you always got to figure out what works best for you, but that's just kind of a general strategy to start with.
I'd really like to underscore that the idea that you do have to find out what works best for you, because everybody's different. And I think, just as we were mentioned before with the heat, where I really like to run in the heat, you're going to figure out, Nate, that you like to hydrate at different times. If I'm running myself, if I'm running anything more than a 5K, anything more than a half an hour run, I make sure that I take some water or some electrolyte drink with me, because I just find that I like to have a little sip every now and then. Part of the training for these long races isn't just the race itself. It's figuring out what works for you. So that's going to mean, figuring out when you're thirsty. It sounds like to me you're already figuring out that you are thirsty and that you should do something before 6 or 7 miles. But also what type of goo you like, even just the flavor of goo. I know that Mike and I go to the store and we have long conversations about, what flavors work for us. You figure out that stuff. It's trying all these different things before you get to the race. But definitely, I would not go 6 or 7 miles without something to drink for your long runs or some sort of energy stuff.
I stepped on a lemon lime goo the other night, and it's my favorite. I was really heartbroken. I still haven't recovered from that. Okay,
It get all over your leg?
Kim Taylor from Twitter says, "How long do you take to recover after a long run? What other workouts do you do in between runs? I just like suggestions on what to do in between runs and recovery recommendations, stretching, fuel, etc. Thanks." This is a very loaded question, Kim. One of the things is that, what's a long run? A long run for me may be different from a long run for Michelle or Steve. What you have to do is you have to gauge what your body talks to you, how it talks to you after a long run. What kind of results do you see if you don't give yourself enough time in between runs? As far as workouts go, everybody is different. I know that there are people who bike in between runs. They work on their core with weights, It's one of those things where it's like it's really really difficult for me to give advice because everybody's different. So I would say try what works for you and listen to your body. Michelle, why don't you go next?
Well, I don't like. I found out pretty early that if I just run, it's not safe for me. So I do a lot of different things. So I do my long runs on Saturdays, and I probably shouldn't do this, but then I play 2 hours of tennis on Sunday mornings just because I've been doing that for years, and that's not really a huge workout for me. I give myself a break, and then I do strength training 2 days a week. I do spin, and I also run 30 minutes to a half hour on other days of the week. But if I have a particularly long run, like when I did 17 or 20 miles, I'll wait a few days before I do anything at all because I want to make sure that I've recovered, that my legs feel okay, and that I'm not pushing. Because if you push and you're not fully recovered, that's when injuries come about, and it's just miserable. You don't want to risk not being able to run for longer. Steve, what do you think?
Chocolate milk. That's my favorite. I think she was asking about something about recovery. Chocolate milk is low-fat chocolate milk. It's an excellent post-run drink. It's got carbohydrates. It's got some good fats in. It's got a little sodium in. It's got a little magnesium, potassium. So if you're looking for something really basic to drink afterwards, you know, 20, 22 ounces of chocolate milk right afterwards, I do it all the time. Very refreshing, kind of gets those glycogen stores rebuilding for the next day. Get some good proteins in you. Get something to eat within about a half hour. I personally do a little bit of light stretching. I run probably 5 to 6 days a week and kind of follow that same routine. But I think somebody mentioned earlier, you know, listen to your body. You know, that's how you found out how much distance you can handle, how frequent, and exactly what you need for recovery. So I guess the last note I'd make on recovering is, you know, biggest thing you're trying to think about recovery is not only recover from today's run, but to prepare your body for tomorrow's run. Right. So that's what's real key is that you're trying to get everything in motion so tomorrow you can go out and run strong.
And you talked about chocolate milk, which I love. My brother is an Iron Man. He turned me on to something called Endorox, which is a protein drink that I take after every long run. So you can go to like the vitamin shop or get it on Amazon. Steve, do you sell that in your store?
Yep. Endorox, yep. Probably the number one recovery, post-run recovery drink. It's got all those things that you want in there. A lot of vitamins in there help with reduce muscle inflammation. You use the chocolate, lemon, lime, orange. Which one do you use?
I use orange, and I'm not crazy about it. I have to say, yeah. I have to force myself to drink it.
I would agree with you 100%. But if you, yeah, exactly. It's a hold your nose and drink it kind of a thing.
It's kind of like, I don't know, like Tang to me. Yeah. But it's, I mean, it's not unbearable, but it's just not as good as chocolate milk.
Well, I usually recommend folks, not to beat the Endorox thing to death, but either go with the chocolate or the vanilla and mix it in milk.
Oh, that's
and
a good
makes,
idea.
Makes it much more pleasant.
I haven't plus seen it, that where I get my stuff at the vitamin shop.
Yeah, plus it adds a little to it.
I have mine in the refrigerator. One more thing. Steve mentioned magnesium and potassium. Very important for magnesium. Helps your muscles relax and prevent cramping. And potassium and magnesium together help you hold on to that calcium that you want to hold on to. Okay, we're going to go to Monica, who says, love your podcast. My question is not about the usual races. I've heard a little about the Disney Cruise Line 5K on Castaway Cay. Is this an or is it key? Is this an official Disney event? What can a runner expect at this race? I'm hoping that the 5K will entice Disney groom to take me on a cruise. Thanks for the great shows. Peace, love, and pixie dust. Signed, Disney Bride. And in parens, she says, I'm such a Disney geek. I married a guy named Walt, and that's Monica. Michelle, you're the 5K expert here, so tell us about Castaway Keys 5K.
Well, one of us just went on a cruise, but I do know that the Castaway Key 5K, from what I understand, and I haven't done it, we have a lot of friends who have done it, it is part of the daily events that you get. It's the navigator, that daily event sheet that you get. You can go and sign up for it. My understanding is about 80 to 100 people do it max, and it's very low-key. It's not a timed race. It's just fun way to see Castaway Key. I don't know anything about the route, but you don't sign up through Run Disney to do that event. And Steve, you didn't do it on your recent cruise?
No, I did run on the ship though, and that's that we'll have to maybe save that for another podcast, but that is a very interesting experience to be running on a moving cruise ship.
We have a friend who did 20 miles, her 20-mile long run on the cruise ship.
Holy moly. Yeah. I did four on the deck, and that was probably enough.
Oh, that's good. So, Monica, I hope you get to go on cruise, and if you do that 5K, come back and report to us. Tell us how it is. We'd like to know.
Yeah, we won't mention who that was. Christine Griffin. Anyways, we have our last question for the show, and it comes from Jeff Franciski, who comes all the way from Fishers, Indiana, with this question. And the question is, hey, guys, love the podcast, especially since we've planned our last few trips around Disney runs. I did the Dopey in 2009. My wife did the 5K and the half. And in 12, ran with my wife during her first marathon in the Disneyland half in 2009. And it looks like they got their coast-to-coast medals for that. We just got back from our annual turkey trot. And while running, I was thinking, and he says, don't you do your best thinking on a run or in the shower? He says, we're planning on doing the Princess Half in 2014. She's going to run as Cinderella, and I'm going as Elvis Mickey Presley. She's going to have a sign that says, who needs a prince when I've got the king? My question is there any male merchandise available at the expo, or will I actually save a few bucks this time around just to spend it at the World of Disney? Thanks, and keep up the good work. That's a good question. The what's interesting is that the Wine and Dine Expo had more merchandise for the ladies than for the guys. As far as the Princess Half Marathon, I'm pretty sure that I saw nothing for the men. I believe it was all for the ladies, tiaras and everything, you know, this is our day or whatever. Now, since there are a lot of men running the princess, Disney being the wise merchandise people that they are, may actually have some shirts there. But I'm guessing that it's probably not going to happen, Jeff. So you'll be spending your money on something else. Probably.
You know, Mike, I've noticed since I ran my first half in 2009 that the Run Disney merchandise is just exploding. I mean, there's just so much available. And you're right, at the Wine and Dine, there was tons and tons of merchandise for women available. I wouldn't be surprised if they had a few more things. They haven't had much in the past, but I wouldn't be surprised because I think the princess is becoming such a big race for people. People really are using that as their introduction to Disney running. So I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I think it's time for Disney. I was thinking about this today, just mentioning, thinking about while you're out on your runs. I was thinking today, you know, with the Tinkerbell and the Princess, they need to do a male-oriented race there, like the Wreck-It Ralph race or something like that.
The Gaston Gallop.
Exactly. And there we can take care of the men's swag.
That would go over well, men only.
Guys go goofy, and we're going to go goofy over giving away some socks because it's that time. And Michelle, we have, let me count them, how many people we have for this particular show questions. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people eligible.
I think we have 8, Mike. That's how my count.
That's why I pay you the
the big bucks. So yeah. I have to say, Steve, I know I've thanked you before. I'm just loving my socks, so thank you very much for sending some to me. So we have 8 people. If Steve chooses a number, I've taken everybody's name, put a number in random order, and if Steve chooses a number, we will give away a pair of Sock Geek socks.
All right. In fact, everybody that's been a past winner should have their socks by now. So if you haven't received them, contact us at, what is it, questions at
Mickey Miles Podcast.
Mickey Miles Podcast. Yep. But everybody should have their socks by now. Let's go with number 7.
That is John Maloney.
So all right, John.
John Maloney, send us a note and you have won some free socks.
Include your shoe size, John.
Include your shoe size and your address, of course. He's from Hershey, Pennsylvania. They have a very nice half marathon there too. Mm-hmm. In addition to a nice theme park, and I think they make something else there in Hershey. But John, send us your address and we will send you some socks.
And that will do it for this edition of the Mickey Miles Podcast. Again, we want to thank you for sending in your questions. And please send more, because the question you may ask may be a question that a lot of people need to have the answer to. And one more time, I want to remind everybody that if you happen to be at the Walt Disney World Resort between November 28th and December 2nd, you might be able to catch Michelle and myself. We will be down there for reunion, so please stop by and say hello. And if not, we'll see you on the road. But before we sign off, I'm going to turn over to Michelle, but I think she has one more thing to add. Michelle?
I did. I just want to remind people that we are going to be doing a show about holiday gifts for runners. And if you have a holiday gift wish, or you would like to suggest something that should be on every runner's wish list, send us a short 30-second to 1-minute MP3, and we will include you on the show.
And we're looking forward to listening to those audio clips. And with that, for Steve Bernhardt and for Michelle Scribner-McLean, this is Mike Scopa saying we'll see you on the road.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/Mickey Miles Podcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Mickey Miles Pod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com, and we'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.